Welcome to the Huntsville Macintosh Users Group April 2007 formal meeting.
Show up. Okay, we'll start the meeting since it's 10 o'clock, and since I'm the only officer around, we'll have the treasurer's report. Our balance as of the end of February was $4,267.11. We've had $200 worth of deposits, and as of March 31st, our balance was $4,467.11. We've got 49 active members, 32 of whom have paid dues for 2007. 11 people still really need to pay their dues. Six people joined later in 2006, so their dues technically aren't really due yet. So we're doing pretty good. So far in April, we've had two expenditures, one of which is to the library for $75, which is for the repair and inspection of the outlets in the room. They had a contractor take care of it, and so we reimbursed them as a donation. So I just paid that, and also we got a little piece of equipment here so that we could hook up the MacBooks to the projector. We hadn't been able to do that. So.
Did you say the six joined later in 2006?
Yes, they had. You know, throughout the year, some of them were June and September, so. I'm not too worried about them yet. I won't get on their case. A couple announcements. One, I heard from Pete Belcher, our former treasurer, and I had asked him how he was doing, and I just thought you all might be interested in hearing how he is. He says he's still having trouble with his breathing. Any exertion, he's out of breath. I have to keep my oxygen on all the time, and even with it, I have trouble at times. I'm still going to Vanderbilt, but so far they haven't helped me. I have been told to avoid crowds and to try not to get any type of respiratory infection, so I'm staying very close to home. But he misses us, and he hopes that he will be able to.
Is he still living in Huntsville?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I think it's the case where he's not physically able to go through a move,
I knew play
pack everything up and do.
Listen, if I can add, he told me that Vanderbilt also told him he was not a candidate for Lundgren.
Okay, well. I have a request from Lip, who is out of town today. St. Stephen's Episcopal Church is having their Hog Heaven barbecue that's coming up. And if anyone would like to buy some of their barbecue, you can order it via the internet by Sunday the 15th. That's tomorrow. So, in case you want to, that's what you need to do for that. And then Pat Kaiser's not here today. She's visiting family for the next 10 days or so. But it came to my attention that one of her quilts, well, a quilt, she did a quilt for the poster at Panoply. And it looks beautiful. And Marius is going to put a link to this on the HMUG website. So we'll be able to see, you all be able to go out and look at that. So that's really neat, and you can get this poster through the Arts Council. There's, that information is also at the website.
They did a poster itself, don't
they? They did a poster of the quilt that she made.
Oh, okay.
She made a quilt, and just for, she writes here, she describes what she did. Mm-hmm. But the background fabric uses an old-time quilt pattern, mm-hmm. and it has over 100 different fabrics. Mm-hmm. Cut into 1,000 pieces to do the background. And then the rest of it is embroidered and appliqué on there. So she is quite a quilter. And that. So that is all that I have as far as officers' reports. Marius, do you have anything you'd like to?
Well, I certainly do. I assume most of you are aware from the previous meeting that we have updated the website somewhat. It looks rather different now. And I'm still looking for gremlins hidden in the far corners of the website. So if you discover anything that doesn't work correctly, please let me know. But I think we've made quite a step forward here. There's one thing, though, that you need to be aware of. I have deleted a lot of old out-of-state files. So if you're looking for things for OS 9, you will have a hard time finding anything. And also, I've started getting rid of things that are no longer being used, that is to say, software packages. That brings me up to actually today's presentation a little bit. The review that Linda will be presenting is already up online. And what I want to say is I highly encourage more such reviews because we were down to two that Tom had done here a couple of years ago, and that was it. Because everything else we had was from a different millennium. And that's how old most of our reviews were. So I have encouraged more reviews. And the point that I wanted to make regarding reviews, Linda had a number of pictures in there. And she used, I assume, just the finders grabbing your utility. That is to say, she just used the key combination on the keyboard to take a picture of her screen, and then just crop things out. I would prefer it, if you do so, to use the grab utility, applications utilities, and just take a picture of the page, of that window rather than of the whole screen, because then I have to manually crop things to get it looking a little cleaner. And so to just sort of as a point, if you use images, use the grab utility so you can just select the window rather than the whole.
Is that the same when you use the master for?
Yes.
Yes.
The Command Shift 4, if you haven't done it, is simply you just hit it and your cursor changes into a crosshair. And you put it back to the top left, and you drag it to the bottom right, whatever part of what you can just put whatever little image of it you want to cover. And when you let go, it dumps it to a PNG file. On your desktop, it's like picture1.png, picture2, and then you can go back and do whatever you want.
Yeah, but the difference is on the grab utility, you can select a particular window and it'll grab that. You don't have to actually drag over it. It'll select just that active window, which is a little easier because sometimes you select a little too much or a little too few of it.
Well, sometimes I don't want to open this.
Well, yeah, in that case, you do, but the grab utility allows you to do that as well.
How do you get to the grab utility?
It's under applications utilities.
Anything else?
And that's it.
Okay. Adam? Bob?
The next meeting, I think, is supposed to be the cookout.
No, well, the next business is, but
the
next business meeting is the cookout. And that's May 12th at Montesano. And if you go out to the HMUG website, there's the information about it. And we need to have the reservations that you're coming by the 5th of May, I believe. And that tells you that on there, too. It also tells you the menu. You have anything else? We're doing the formal part of the business meeting. And then we're going to do the demo, so I can get.
I don't have anything for the formal part.
You've got flash. You're going to do the
flash.
No,
I don't have a flash. I just.
I'm going to let everybody know also that might be interested in not. If you want to see a full television show done completely on a Macintosh, Sunday night, 10 p.m. John 54. I have a contract with the Tennessee Valley Vipers. We're doing In the Game, which is completely done. Commercials, all of it is all done with Matt. So you can see all the stuff at the end, you know, all the stuff we did. We did her bit and Final Cut and Motion, and it's all, you know, all the graphics. Everything you see, there's not one thing on there that's not done on Matt.
What time was that again?
10 p.m. Sunday night.
Okay.
Channel 54. It's Box 54.
Does anybody have any other old business or anything they would like to?
We had a discussion a couple months ago about revamping the meeting format and mentioned having the flashes at the end of the meeting. Mm-hmm. And I've given that some thought. I don't think that's a smart idea from the standpoint that there's often people who come here to get information and they may not be interested in that specific program. So you're ending up forcing them to wait through the program to get to the flashes what they came for. And I think from a, you know, if we had a captive audience, it's one thing, but we don't. And I've noticed a couple times recently when we've had new people in here that we got involved in massive discussions and they got bored and left.
Well, I noticed that last time there was a new person, and after we dragged through the flashes and he left before the program started. And I can see that sometimes with the flashes, to me, people get uninterested because they kind of go off onto the tangents at times, and there's not enough direction and guidance, and it just becomes a free-for-all, and a lot of times there's people talking among themselves in the background, and it's just...
Yeah, I'm aware of the meeting you're referring to. We really got far off on tangents and stuff that wasn't the main of the issue, but I think it would be better if we kept our flashes up toward the front, and then if there was a program that someone just wasn't interested in, they at least got the benefit of the meeting that they wanted, and if they left, they left. I just like to consider that.
Well, maybe you should consider the idea you could have some, you know, flashes up front, and then these really debatable issues where you did get your pre-form, you know, put that to the after the program. You know,
well, the presiding officer, if we get a flash that's going over long distance for a long time, could suggest we curtail discussion on it until after the presentation.
Yeah, back over again. That's where it's, yeah, not under control. So the boss.
We can try to do that, and I mean, anybody, if people start seeing that happens in a flash, anybody can suggest it. If David or I or Linda or any of the other officers that aren't jumping in to say, let's just push this to the end. One thing I've thought about on that issue is, because I mean, it's either way can happen. I mean, people can come for the program and not want to sit through the flashes. People can come for the flashes and not want to sit through the program. It's possibly, well, we know generally we're going to have, you know, 45 minutes, and typically a flash is usually, and formal meeting. So if, like, maybe we changed, like, when we announce our meeting to say, like, you know, programs approximately beginning at this time, not so much saying that we're always going to start a program at 11 and not before, but say, you know, if you get here, if you just want to see the program, if we keep flashes in the front and we just want to see the program, if someone wants to see the program, they can just, if I show up at 10:30 or 10:45, I know I don't have to sit through as many flashes and I can get to the program a lot quicker. That's one idea.
And I personally feel that as a presenter, if I know I'm going to present and if I went to the trouble of getting prepared for it, I don't particularly want to sit here and wait through the flashes. I want to come, I want to present, and then you can all do whatever you want. I don't care. But I think just sitting here till 11 o'clock while discussion goes on. Okay. I'll go shopping for a while then.
Yeah, I know what you mean by that.
You know,
you're already in the zone, you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm ready to go and I'm ready to do it. Yeah. I don't want to sit there You know, I'm not going to participate in the flashes because I don't want to get distracted.
Exactly.
So as a presenter, I would rather go ahead and do it. If that gets too drawn out, you know, like, okay, we've had our business meeting. It's 10:15. I honestly don't know how long my presentation will take. I haven't timed it. But if it takes to 11 and I'm still going and going and going, I hope not. But, you know, it's fine. We can try to wrap it up so that there is time for the flashes and do it. Now, I think that the proposal was more like for the formal meeting, hey, of the presentation first, and the informal, hey, of the flashes first, is the way I think that the proposal was, although I don't have a copy of it. And that would kind of give a nice balance to which way, and then we could, you know, we could try it that way for a while and see what the, how people really like it, rather than just say, hey, let's have flashes. And
I know, I understand what you're saying, but I disagree with you, because I've sat here at times when, if I wasn't the chairman and had to pick up the equipment, they had a program that I absolutely didn't care about, I would have been involved. And for a visitor or someone, some of the members who don't have the responsibility to stay for the duration, they often, if the program is just something that they could care less about, will may not stay for the flashes, and then sooner or later, it's not worthwhile for them to come. Consider it.
I would rather come to the program than the flashes.
You've got two different types of people you're trying to cater to at the exact same time. It's the issue.
And I think that if people would start using the forums out on HMUG with their questions, they could get the questions posed when they arise. I mean, if I go home and I suddenly have something go wrong and I have a question, I'm not going to sit there for 2 weeks till I can come to the next meeting and wait to do a flash on it. If I know that the HMUG forums are out there, I could pose it and maybe somebody would read it. And if some people, you know, they get in the habit of reading those, then they could probably get their questions answered much quicker and not have to wait for the flashes. And I have found that the flashes pertain, a lot of times pertain to one person with one very narrow piece of equipment that they do need an answer to. I agree. But do 20 other people, are they really interested in how to make something work with this one specific kind of printer? Whereas they could pose that question on the forum and somebody might be able to give them guidance. If the question is like about something they're trying to do in Excel or Word or something, that has more of a general interest to the group. And that's a good flash question for everybody to hear because they might learn something from that.
Yeah, let me just add to that, because the whole point of having the forums online is that they can be seen by a much larger group of people than just the ones that are in the room for a given meeting. And the fact that they're not using the forums for what they're meant to be used for, I mean, they're just sitting there collecting dust for all practical purposes. Yet, they would allow you, if you have Flash, to get it up there. If more people were posting, probably some of us would be checking it on a daily basis. And if there's something we can add, you'll add it right then and there. Of course, since people are posting, you know, very, very rarely, I don't pay much attention to it anymore, but I get an automatic email generated to me every time something is posted. So I know if somebody has posted a question. If I have an answer, I'll respond. You know, and David would do the same thing. But since you're not using it much, there's nothing for us much to do about this.
You had a hand in the back.
The flash is, if you have an immediate problem, I agree, you could put it on the internet. A lot of times the flashes stir up conversation or other questions that come out of that, and we may end up starting on one topic and go all the way around it, covering a lot of things that ultimately help a lot of folks besides just the guy that asked one question.
Right. But the same thing is true for the online forum. You can easily have a thread turn into multiple other threads because something has been brought up that is only tangentially related to the initial question.
Some people just aren't forum-oriented.
Well, true enough. I personally get more out of the meetings in the exchange of information during flashes than I do for a lot of programs. A lot of programs just don't fit my interest. They're nice. People do a great job on them. I don't care about them. It's the intellectual exchange through the flashes that I get the most out of the meetings. I think that's because I'm an old guy, but that's just my job.
I agree with that. We all do it, we tend to fall back, you believe
me. Well, no, nobody's suggesting remotely you're going to stop doing flashes.
Okay.
I mean, don't even think about it.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of the core things
just be the timing of it.
But what we're trying to say is there are flashes and there are flashes.
Right.
There are some that are very specific and probably not all that interesting for the whole group, you know, a particular little hardware problem or software problem versus things, as Linda was saying, that are very broad, that are everybody uses those applications or that hardware, and a lot of people will gain from having these things discussed, you know. So it's hard to say, though, which one is in which group ahead of time. So, you know, it's like you can have the general interest flashes versus the highly specialized flashes. So I guess we're still going to end up doing it the whole way.
This could be, like you suggested, table one that seems lengthy, and then if we want to stay from here, we can finally say so.
I think the trick is to let the flashes completely get out of hand.
Right.
The program doesn't get done.
Well, that
does happen.
That, I think, as was discussed here a couple minutes ago, is very much in the hands of whoever is the presiding officer. If you have something that gets so large that it takes on a life on its own, you either table it toward the end of the meeting, or you say, hey, wait a second, this is important enough for somebody to work out a presentation on at a future meeting so we can go into much greater depth.
You say to me it's obvious that compromise is required. And it's a suggestion that this meeting, perhaps, to have the program first, everybody knows that. If they don't, are interested, come later for the flashes. Informal meeting, have the flashes first. Everybody knows that. It seems like a reasonable compromise, this suggestion was made.
Yeah, but if you can't get the presentation going at 11 o'clock, then you just need to automatically chop it off.
Yeah, because I don't think it's fair to the presenter. I mean, yeah, 11 o'clock is a good time to chop off flashes, do the presentation, get through that, then the time at the end can be picked up again with flashes or more questions about the presentation, whatever it was.
Another point about giving the presentation the beginning. I know we haven't had many outside presenters in recent years, but if we want to bring more in, they don't want to wait through the flashes. They want to give their presentation and be on their way.
Yeah, but those would be the exceptions.
Well, we've had that occur. We've adjusted our schedule. Yeah.
Right. That would be
exceptions.
That's no problem.
Well, you can invite them for 11 o'clock.
Well, usually
the presentation will be at 11?
Yeah, they're set up time. You don't want to have them set up.
Historically, when we've had out-of-town presenters, they come in, we go into their spiel, and then when they leave, we conduct the rest of our meeting.
Right.
As an exception.
off.
So for that case, either flipping the format of one of the two meetings would work, or just making the exception would work. And we can look at that. We're kind of spending a ton of time discussing how we're going to do our business.
That's why we have a little business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's probably
thinking
about the formal meeting is let them do the presentation at the beginning and do it the other way, and then your informal meeting is just the opposite.
That's it.
And see, that's one thing that when I send out the emails announcing the meeting, I can put down the agenda. And for the business meeting, say, you know, formal meeting with officers' reports, old business, new business, presentation, and then flashes starting at approximately 11 o'clock. And if somebody wants flashes, they can come for flashes. Somebody wants the presentation, they can come for that. They can leave, they can stay. It doesn't hurt. And with the informal, we can just say, hey, it's informal, we're going to have flashes, and we're going to have a presentation on iLife or whatever, you know, like next time is. And people would know what to expect then. Betty.
I
want to
just say, I appreciate the magic. I'm thinking that this is going to be a rigidness. Just the fact that you send those reminders gets me up. I don't need all that rigidness of point to point to point. I guess I'm just like that. That other movie.
After all, this is supposed to be fun.
Right. And y'all about to make it real. That A word, you know. Yeah. Get it in the mail. Or me.
I think I do think sending out the emails and that has helped a lot with getting people, more people coming and getting them interested. And I'm also sending them to anybody that was a member from 2000 on. However, with those, the email addresses I have, some of them are old. I know yesterday after I sent mine out, I probably had 15 to 20 out of that list that were bounced back to me, and I have just removed them. I'm not spending any time hunting down people. One was very nice saying, I don't live in Huntsville anymore, please remove me. But, you know, but at least, and I know there's been a couple from those inactive that have expressed interest to me, so that is worthwhile doing. Anything else for old business? New business?
And I have one comment. I don't know whether it's new news or old news, but I read where Apple has announced they're going to delay Leopard for 4 months.
It was on last night, October.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was
good.
Go to that. It's supposed to be through September. They cited iPhone as being the reason, too much development effort spent there. Partially think that's kind of baloney.
It is.
It's iPhone is one of the many reasons why it's not done. Personally, I think it's more of a issue of Apple's product line has gotten so big, both hardware and software. And not only that, now they have to support G3, G4, this offshoot G5 that was made by IBM and not Motorola for the processors, then their Intel, then they have to make sure Rosetta works, and it's just like a lot of stuff in their boot camp for Windows booting. So, you know, they might as well just blame Vista as the reason, you know, trying to keep compatibility with it or something. That's been better.
There's this mysterious set of so-called super secret features. That Steve Jobs announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference last year, none of which have surfaced yet. Yes. So God knows what they are and in what state of development they are. Mm-hmm. But the developers' beta
both records that came out last week, or actually this week, the most recent version, has a laundry list of things that need fixing. And so it's very clear that this is nowhere close to be ready for prime time. In 2 months at the World Developers Conference this year, they're going to put out another beta version, but one that's a little bit more widely distributed. And that's probably going to have all the real features in it. And then we'll sort of see what method will be, and then they have to sort of get rid of that. Remember, by October, maybe we can buy this thing. Or maybe not.
I think they kept, they'll reveal most of the secrets and features or whatever that they're working on in June, though, because the real reason they didn't do that before is they wanted Vista to come out so that it could be borrowed for that release.
So. Well, that's sort of...
That's Leopard.
that's sort of a flash.
So I guess we need to come up with a new program for in the June because we had said we'd discuss Leopard.
Yeah, I think you might want to touch base with David on what we'll do in the place of Leopard.
I think they come out with the new Mac Pro this past week.
They did?
Yeah, oh, Mac Pro. Brand new, and it's got four processors in it, which is dual core, which is eight out there.
Yeah. Well, it's actually two processors.
But they're dual
four cores.
Four cores. Yeah.
Four cores.
Four cores.
Yeah.
Quad core.
Also, an H1 question. We have all this news up online. Actually, apropos that, as I'm looking at it right now, I put a quick clip news item up on Google Desktop, and I went and downloaded it. It's a beta. Google Desktop is sort of a search engine for your computer, so whatever file, so it's sort of a replacement for Spotlight, which we all know has its strengths and weaknesses. But when I looked at it, I found it to be, Google Desktop that is, I found it to be really slow. It sort of reminds me of the old pre-Spotlight searching that Apple did, where it had to go catalog their whole hard drive and would take days and days and days to do so. Google Desktop is fast slow. And second of all, what I then discovered very soon afterwards that it is using some hooks in the operating system, which are, let's say, less than secure. And so after reading that information, I quickly deleted Google Desktop from both machines I had installed on. So just sort of be cautious. It does two things. It uses, it's called Input Manager, which was one of the bugs that were discussed in the month of Apple Bugs in January. So there are some issues with that. Second of all, it opens a web server so you can search your own hard drive. I don't know about the security of that, if it's only for the machine it's on or if you can log in from other machines. Just imagine somebody searching your hard drive because that port is open. So, you know, careful.
Yeah. Glad you said that because I was thinking about trying that this weekend, playing with it. I'll just skip it. Okay. So, flashes?
No, we're already in the middle of them. So.
Yeah.
Must be some flashes.
This has nothing to do directly with Mac, but this is the weekend of the local Van Cliver Festival. My wife and I have tickets to it, and we're unable to attend this afternoon's performance. So I have two tickets for anybody who would like to have them. 3 o'clock, Trinity United Methodist. Front row.
Other flashes.
Must be going very well. We have so few problems.
Question. question when I opened up some of the lessons I had that have a picture. And it says, cannot open, you do not have him, I am. What is that?
Mayan? You do not have
him? I don't know.
I'm sort of questioning the message because Mayan is a standard with multimedia files to be encoded as attachments for email. And there's not a known email client that does not understand what a MIME attachment is.
Then why doesn't our software...
The only thing I can think of is that the file type for that particular attachment is not known to your computer. Your computer certainly knows what MIME is, but it may be some weird Windows format that your computer does not know how to open.
Are there some formats that Microsoft is not supporting anymore?
Well, let me back up one step. What are you using as your mail client? Are you using Apple Mail or are you using Entourage?
I'm using Comcast.
Oh, Apple Mail. I think we found the answer right there. Comcast has their own one-off version of something or another, and it may not be as complete in its support of various file formats as Apple Mail or Microsoft Entourage. The only recommendation I have in this case is use one of the two above-mentioned mail clients. It may require a little bit of configuration, trying to figure out how to do it, because a lot of these ISPs want you to use their whatever. Are you using a web client, doing it through the web, or do you actually have an application from Comcast that does your mail?
Just bring up the Comcast
website.
Okay,
so it's a webmail thing. Yeah, webmail tends to be very flaky for supporting these kinds of things. And I try to stay away from webmail whenever possible. Webmail, for me, has only one purpose in life, run away from home and away from my own computer. That way I can go onto any computer with a web browser and get to my mail. But if I want to do real serious work, I need to have a real mail client that's faster.
Yeah, it's more exact. A few months back, I did the program on how to set up the different ISPs mail clients.
Yeah.
If you search on Comcast website or just Google search Comcast mail server settings, Mac, POP is a nice word to throw in there.
IMAP.
It's probably going to be POP, though. But there is, under their knowledge base or frequently asked questions, there is a page, and Comcast gives you. They might have been the ISP that gave you four pages, actually. I'm not sure. There was one that did. Can't remember. But basically, if you scan it, they're going to probably tell you how to set up with some other mail client. But what you want to find in there is an incoming mail address and an outgoing mail address. The incoming is going to be either imap.comcast or pop.comcast or mail.comcast. Mm-hmm. The outgoing is going to be smtp.comcast, probably, but it'll be smtp something. Then you can go into Apple Mail, hit preferences, and add a new account and enter those server addresses in there, your username and password, and see if you can, and it should grab your mail, and likewise you should be able to email out to the world with the outgoing mail address. And once you've tested it one time, got it working, I recommend going in there and turning on all the little security features they show. So just click through all the account panes, and there's one under the advanced settings, there's one under the outgoing SMTP server settings. And it'll say, like, use SSL or secure or something. Anywhere you see the word secure, click it. And if it still works, then you can use the secure thing. If it doesn't, you ought to back out of the settings and let the mail transfer plain text.
There's one little addition to that. When you're at home, your ISP knows what your IP address is in the sense that it is part of their set of IP addresses. Their server will always be a little less strict about outgoing mail if you're within their range of IP address. So if you're traveling, those settings that you have at home on your laptop, for instance, may not work. There, you have to authenticate for SMTP from the outgoing mail. So it is almost always the case that they will have a setup where you can password or MD5 or something authenticate so that you can send mail out even if you're not local.
But the basic thing to remember is find the incoming mail server address and find the outgoing, and then use that to set up after mail.
And in their FAQs, they usually tell you if they will take those security settings. So, because some may use different ways of doing it, they'll tell you what you can and cannot do.
Do you use Apple Mail?
Absolutely. I use it for any number of different mail systems, from campus to Gmail to my home ISP. It aggregates everything, which is nice, one-stop shop for everything.
Before I invest this money in .net, is there a website where I can go and see what are my advantages? Because I'm just learning something.
You can sign up for .net for $90 for free.
Okay.
Just go to .net, sign up, and they'll just test it for 3 months.
Okay. And they'll give you email when it gets close.
What the advantages? You know,
If you go to Apple's website, they actually have a section of .net and it's spelled out everything you can.
Well, when you sign up for that 3 months, you get everything as if you were an actual user.
Absolutely.
So you get to see everything that a user would see. Right.
Yeah, of course, it expires.
Once
then
you log in.
Until you pay for it.
And once you log in.
Yeah, from what I understand, if you want to get a good price on the membership, go through Amazon.
Well, that was what I was going to do, but I wanted to do my little research before I invest that money.
Good.
Okay.
Once you log in with the trial account, too, they have a big knowledge base in the website that will let you tutorials on how to do everything that they offer.
Is there any news on Mac 2008
for Office?
The news, last news I've heard, is that it's in private beta. But it's not in public beta because I haven't heard from them yet.
I mean, that's all over
the place. That's good. It's still a good 6 months away.
Anyone know anything about Adobe Acrobat 8?
What are you looking to know?
What's it going to be on?
Acrobat 8 for this episode. I have not yet.
I went to the website the other day, and everything they had there was PC.
Are you talking about the reader, or are you talking about the Pro application?
Not for application. They announced the Creative Suite 2.3 with Acrobat 8 6 months ago, and they just announced Creative Suite 3 with everything.
Yeah, Creative Suite 3, though, is not shipping until another few days.
I'm just looking for not the Acrobat reader, but the standard Acrobat program.
It's been out for
I had it for at least 3 or 4 months.
I'm going to go back to it because I was trying to get it the other day, and everything I started looking at, I think I was all the way to the cash register that said PC, and I backed all the way up. There's nothing in there that said anything about the Mac.
That's a good question. I'm personally planning on getting one of the bundles for CS3. I was trying to work on Linda's pictures for review yesterday, and I quickly realized that I thought Elements could do certain things, and I found it didn't. And so I said, well, I have to get a real Photoshop back onto my computer.
Well, I have ordered Creative Suite 3, and So I assume it'll ship it Monday. Excellent.
Yeah, it's supposed to ship on the 15th.
I think they messed up with Adobe Stewart. I went to Adobe's website recently, and I wanted to check on the status of the order. And they don't show my order in there, but I have an email from them. And they had some comment about, you know, if your stuff isn't in here, it was in a previous store, and which I didn't quite understand. And maybe that fits in with Bob, what Bob thought about. Maybe they messed some things up recently.
Well,
I don't know. But I do have emails that confirming the invoice.
For all I know, there's a human being that does these web pages, and they may have done something less than brilliant along the way somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to order an academic discount or so.
I understand.
I'm not going to go directly through Adobe in any case.
Yeah.
All right.
Next topic. Another flash, another question. Anything? Going once?
I'm doing the presentation.
Going twice? Ready?
Yeah, I guess I'm ready. No, because then they'll be watching those.
Oh.
Looking at those instead of what they're supposed to be looking at.
Gotcha. I just saw a nice pile there.
Oh, no, this is my notes.
Oh.
No, oh. Don't worry. That's just in case. Do you want to flip the lights, I guess, so that people can see this better?
Is it this one?
Oh, that's okay. I don't know. Try them. Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I can. I can see enough. I don't need them that badly. It's just really printouts of their help.
I think it's time for another donation so they can replace light bulbs.
Yeah, they're missing a few.
Okay, the presentation today is on a software package called iRemember, and iRemember is written specifically for the Mac. And it concerns digital scrapbooking. Now, scrapbooking has been very popular as a hobby over the last few years, but it has not really involved digital scrapbooking. This is going back to the old photo albums that your family had with their pictures, with the little black corners on the pages, and, you know, you probably have several of those around your house. And this has evolved to regular scrapbooking, which are pages like that, but they've fancied them up. They've got to have something a little bit more gimmicking than just plain pictures with black corners in an album. So people have taken it to a different level, and they're doing digital scrapbooking now, which is a whole lot easier because you can create a scrapbook on your Mac, and then you could send the pages via email to family members if you wanted them to see it. So this software package is iRemember. You have to go and buy it. You cannot download it, that type of purchase. It comes with a CD and you load it onto your machine. It takes a while to load it, simply because it has a heck of a lot of clip art in it. And that's what takes so long to load.
What's the company?
If you Google iRemember, you will, the company is called Intriguing Development Incorporated. But just Google iRemember and you will find it. It runs on Mac OS 10 3.9 or higher. It says it needs 3 gig of disk space. It recommends 512 meg of memory. And you also need the DVD ROM drive required for installation. It costs $39.99 is the list price. Larry at Mac Resource used to have it, but right now he doesn't have any. I was in there yesterday and asked, and there are none. I think I've also seen it over at CompUSA, and I believe you can get it directly from the maker here.
Or Amazon.
I'm sure that you can find it somewhere. Not too hard. So you spend the time and you get it installed. The installation is easy, but it just is time consuming, and it's one of those things. Have faith, it's really doing it. It just takes a while to get all the clip art out there. So what I'm going to show you today is how easily we can create a digital scrapbook. The scrapbook that I'm going to create is going to have several pages to it, and they are really not going to be logically connected. Most of the time when you do a scrapbook, it would have one theme throughout the whole scrapbook. I'm not doing that. I'm just doing random pages. This is also this version 2.0, which is what I have, is also a universal binary version. So it's up to speed. When you open it, you just go to File, and we say we're going to do a new scrapbook. And the first thing that will come up, it will ask you what size paper do you want your scrapbook pages to appear on. Well, if you're going to keep it strictly digital, it probably doesn't hurt what size you want to pick. If you want to print it, if you just want to print it, you could do it on plain paper, which is kind of, but you can pick that. It's one of your options. Or you can use their custom paper sizes. I'm going to use the 8.5 by 8.5. That's a common, regular scrapbook size if you were going to do it. Your other choices are the 12 by 12, which are the big scrapbook pages, but you need a special printer to be able to print on those 12 by 12 pages, or you can go smaller with 6 by 6. Then they've got it in the metric measurements also. But we like the 8.5 by 8.5. So you've picked that. And to make your life simple, which is what this whole package is about, is that it has this wonderful clip art library. I don't know how wonderful it is. That's the wrong word to use. But I'm going to go down to templates because they have created lots of pages. You can see, and I'm going to pick the template for the size paper that I selected. And they're now going to give you this whole, there's 167 different templates for the 8.5 by 8.5 pages. And it's a case of drag and drop. And I'm going to scroll down. I can scroll down. You can, just to give you an idea here. They must think 4th of July is very important. They're very patriotic. Here's one for your anniversary. You could do, you know.
You drag from whence?
I'm going to drag it from here if I wanted this one, which I don't want. So just a second.
Just drag photo here. Where you
that will be the next step.
Okay.
Stay tuned and we will get to that one.
Okay.
We have to pick our template first. So you can see they've got various sports, baby's first haircut. You know, you could do anything. You could do a cute thing like this and send it to all your relatives. The first thing I'm going to pick is, so we don't go through this whole thing, is I'm going to pick Halloween, if I spelled it right. And I'll tell you, I don't like the keyboards on these. By narrowing it down to Halloween, I now have just 5 templates for Halloween. That helps a lot, and of course the one I want It's this last one. Okay? And all I have to do is drag it over, and it's on my main page. So this is really, you know, it's kind of cute, Happy Halloween, and it tells me that I need to drag a photo here. You can take a photo from iPhoto or any other place where you happen to have them. For this demo, and I have done it using iPhoto, so please trust me.
If I may ask a question, does it have a browser for your iPhoto library, or do you have to sort of dig through the whole directory structure in iPhoto to find something?
As far as I know, I would have to open iPhoto.
Okay, so you use iPhoto as your browser. Uh-huh. Because, you know, the iLife applications now all have a browser in each one of them that you can get to media better than the other, so that if I'm, you know, in iMovie, for instance, and I want to get a photo out of iPhoto, I just go into the inspector and open up the library from in there rather than having to open up iPhoto. So they don't have that sort of tight integration.
I did not try doing anything like that. Uh-huh. I simply went to iPhoto. Uh-huh. And what I did today was take some of my pictures from iPhoto, put them over here in a separate little folder to make life easier for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That would be a good thing to make it up.
Yes, you could go through and pick out your pictures first and just kind of have them all sitting here. And I'm going to pick a picture and put it over there. Now, yeah, that's different from what you thought. This is Emma, who is one of our grand puppies, and she's got her little dragonfly costume on. So this will give you instantly. That's all it took for me to be able to do this scrapbook page. That's not hard. Anyone here can do that. So we're happy with that. I'm going to say add. And you will see, let me move this over here, that I'm going to have a running tabulation of the pictures that are in my album coming down here. And all I did was page add. I'm adding a new page in my scrapbook. So once again, we're going to go back to the clip art and my templates, and I'm going to put road trip, and they have one for road trip. And so here we can put in three different photos, and we'll just we did a trip back in the fall of 2004. So I'm just going to pull some of these pictures over here to each one of the locations. Yes, ma'am. You could rearrange them or do whatever you want. If we look at the first one in this triangle, it looks fine, but there's white down at the bottom. So they have a neat thing called Inspector, and since I'm dealing with an image, I can increase the scale, and now it has filled the entire triangle. Just click on the next picture that you want to adjust. And I have made that fit. But if I wanted to see a different part of that particular picture, if it didn't come out the way, I can use the grabber and move it over. and then focus in on this part of the picture that I actually wanted. That would be real good if there was a child in the picture with some background and you really want to center on the child. You could bring that up. And we'll do this one. The same way. So you could show somebody some pictures from your vacation. Whatever. And so all of these templates are fine. You can use them. Some of them are a little hokey, but it'll give you some ideas as to what you can do. But if you don't want to use their templates, then you can create a page on your own. I use Page and Add, and once again, I've got two pages in my album so far. So I'm going to take the rectangle tool and draw me a rectangle. And then I'm going to go arrange, and I'm going to say fit to page. And that will take that rectangle and fill out the whole page without my having to try to move it to make it fit exactly. So I would like to have that, and I would like to do a background on it. And I like to do a background of my own. So I'm going to pick a photo that I have and use this as the background. But when I bring it over, once again, it did not fill that whole 8.5 page. So I can increase the scale and have this as my background. But I think this is too bright for a background. And so you can change the opacity by going here. So now I've got this faint background of yellow leaves. You could do that with any photo that you have. I say, okay, what else am I going to do? They've got other shapes. You're kind of limited by what they have. I think in the background that it kind of uses Photoshop elements. You see similar things, but it does not in any way have the same capabilities. But let's take an oval, and if I hold down shift, it'll come up as a circle. If I take it and don't hold down shift, I can do that with it. And then here we have several other shapes that can be used. And we'll take this. So now I have created three areas to put pictures. Since I don't like that one, I just moved it over a little bit because it was too close. So we'll just look at don't want the clip art. Yes, but I don't want mine. I want that one. Thank you. So we'll look at the fall pictures and we'll pick a couple. So there's nothing like fall, but some colorful leaves as a possibility. A tree that is turned on its side. And whatever that one is, and we'll find out. That's another icky leaf. Okay, first of all, this looks good, but I don't want to look at it that way. So we can rotate it And I know I want to rotate it 90 degrees so it stands up. Okay, there's your tree. I want to take up the whole space. You know, I might want to, if I use the grabber, it'll just move the picture within it. If I use the arrow, it will move my whole circle with the picture in it. I don't like this right now because you can see part of the car. That's not good. So I'll close in a little bit. I'm not using the grabber. And bring that down a little bit. So you've got your fall tree. We will increase this one and see what happens. I'm not that wild about it, but we'll go on with it. And we filled that in. So that's how you can create a page yourself. And I think if you had artistic ability, you could really come up with, you could come up with something more than I can come up with. But we want to add some text to it. So we create a little text box, and it's there, trust me. And I do show fonts. Thank you. And I can pick out any font that I want. I'm going to take this handwriting one and make it a little bit larger and see what happens. I'm going to delete that because it's not as large as I'd like. So I'm going to go up to 36. And I'm typing fall is here. Except I made it too big. And there it all showed up. So I've added words to my pictures. And you have another page there.
Are you able to edit the text in the standard templates?
Yes, you can. And they also, let's just start a new page. And that appeared over there. And the best way, if you want to do your own page, is just do the rectangle and arrange fit to page. That's the best thing you can do. In their templates, well, in their clip art, one of the things they have is text. And in that text, they've got poems. And so you can use some of these if you would like. Now, I'm not positive if I needed, no, I didn't need a text box. I thought maybe I did. But I picked that up from their stuff. And if I double click on that, and I wanted to change it from is to are, I mean, I can change it. So
can you change the title of a template?
You can take a template and make some changes to it if you want, and then you can save it as a template for you or for you yourself to use later on.
You can change Halloween to 4th of July.
Yes, you could.
Okay.
Yeah. You could. If you create a template or any page where you don't want any changes to be made to what you've, that object that you've put on there, you can hit the lock button. And now, I don't know. I was going to say it shouldn't let you, but It just did. No, what it means is that I can't move it on the screen. If I get it positioned on my page the way I want it, then you're better off locking it so that it can't be moved out of that position. But you can change, you can keep changing the words in there if you need to. And I can do a, if I do a file, save as, it asked me if I want to save it as a scrapbook or as a template. And if I save it as a template and give it a name, then it will be available for my use from then on. So now we've got these words. It's locked, so I cannot move it. Until I unlock it, I'm stuck with it where it is. And then the other things in the clip art. Now this software talks about it's got over 5,000 pieces of clip art. Well, yes, it does, but if you look at, let's take ribbons. And I'm going to take any ribbon, so they're going to come up. I don't want any ribbon. I want satin ribbons. Okay, I've got 282 ribbons. You think, oh boy, I can do lots of things. Well, the trick is you've got the same ribbon in many, many colors. So we can do any color you want, but it's the same ribbon. There's nothing special about this. So that's how they get their count of clip art to be such a large number. There's ribbon bows and straight ribbons. Yep. Either bow or straight. And then you, what is nice though? I mean, if you know that you need a yellow ribbon, okay? I can go to the yellow here to pick my color and pick whichever one of these yellows that I want. And it's showing me that I have two items with the yellow ribbon, the bow and the straight one. Bless you. Then I'm going to take the bow and I'm going to put it over here. Yes. Oh, well, I put it over there and it came out right in the middle.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to unlock that one.
To
this image did not want to. I've got a permanent. The poem went away, but let's. I'm doomed. Yes, it's nice that it centers it. My grabber. Very good. You were listening. So we can put the ribbon up here, and then with ribbons, it's nice if you rotate it a little bit so it doesn't look so flat. And I'm going to lock that ribbon because that's where I want it. And now I can't find my poem. Well, right now all I can do is undo the lock.
You should have undone before you.
I should have. Yeah. But you get the picture as to what you can do. to go through it. One other.
If you move that voice word down, you should come back.
Do you want the poem or do you want the ribbon? Which do you want?
Raise your hand and break the whole thing down.
Send it back to the front.
Okay. You can see how we can take text and we can take some of these objects and put them on there. Oh no, they are supposed to know everything about it. We don't know what we did there. We won't worry about it, and we won't save this page. I don't think that's worth it. But some of the other, just to show you some of the other clip art that you can do, they have buttons, and we'll try for gold buttons. I said buttons, folks. Any buttons shaped in gold. Here's a gold button. You say that's going to look large, but it's not. It's over there. So you can add these different touches. The buttons, the tags, you can put words on them. You can type your own words. You can do all that. Once you have your, I'm going to just do add a page. I don't want that one. This page is kind of hokey, you know, and these things happen. So, I'm afraid to. I am page. I'm going to go to page, and I'm going to say delete. And with luck, I want to make sure I'm on that one. Because the other day I did this, and I lost all of them. Are you sure you want the current page? Yes. And I canceled. And I got rid of that one that I don't like. Okay, so we've got three pages in our scrapbook. And we can do save as. And I can save it as, give it a name. And I can save it as an I Remember scrapbook. That's fine. And it's got that name now. But if I go to, well, I hate you. Oh, I called it demo. Okay, if I would send this to somebody, if I would email it, they have to have I Remember before they can open it strictly as the scrapbook. So that's one feature that I don't like. But I can go to File, Open Recent, and there's, I'll call it up again. And you can just, by clicking on these, you can scroll through your scrapbook. This time I'm going to do Export Pages as JPEG. This sounds good. Let's try it. I want to go to my desktop. And I'm going to say HMUG pages. And it saves it as JPEG. And you say, this is good. Yeah, I now have this as four JPEG pages. I can send them so that my friends can see these pages, but they can't see them truly as an album. And that's just one thing that I don't like about it.
And slideshow. One suggestion. Have you tried it as using the preview on the event menu and saving the PDF?
No, I haven't tried it. I haven't
what
tried
was
it.
Repeat
your exact words, Adam. Please.
Using the built-in print menu and OS X and doing the PDF preview function, saving the PDF.
So, this is a very simple way to get you started in scrapbooking. You don't have to be creative enough to be able to create like the buttons yourself and the tags and that. This is something that you could do. You could create party invitations. If your children were going to have a party, birthday party, you could create invitations this way, print them out, because the cardstock that you can get at Staples or craft stores or any place, you could use it with that. Make the pages. You could print out an album, or you could send the individual pictures after you've done these cutesy things with it. It says, well, what's so weird is that it said, I have the what's new in this version. In version 2, yeah, this is what this is. But then what is new in version 1.5 is, that wasn't it. But somewhere it said that you could import it into iPhoto. And just put them in that way and do it. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know that I would particularly really want to do that. A very good feature is their help. You can check out their new features. If you just purchase it and get started, it gives you good pages, good information about how to do it. It gives a little tutorial so that you can go through it and work on that yourself. It go back here. For the common task, it tells you like how you can add photos or clip art to your page. And it takes it through step by step, and I have tried some of these, and they're very good recipe books for doing this. So their help is decent in that. It's just not very fancy. If you want to get into digital scrapbooking, that is really uses Photoshop Elements or Photoshop. There is a place on the net called Scrapper's Guide, which is fabulous for teaching you how to do digital scrapbooking using Photoshop Elements. And it has an excellent tutorial. You can purchase their CD, and it takes you step by step through creating a scrapbook, and it really comes out looking good in that. So, but that's
what are you looking at here?
This is just the I just want to.
The one you were talking about is what?
The one that I was talking about is I Remember.
No,
this is Scrapper's Guide. This is some software that comes from them. And not from them. You use Photoshop Elements, but it teaches you how to use Photoshop Elements. Not particularly from a standpoint of how I've got a photo and I want to improve that photo by maybe getting rid of red eye or making the background kind of lighter and that kind of thing, but how to take the different things, like taking this photo that you have that you're satisfied with and putting a frame around it, and putting shadows, and adding text, and really creating as elaborate a scrapbook page as you would get if you made it out of paper and ribbon and all the actual things. And
that's
it's really...
That's in Elements?
It's using elements. It's not in. I wanted to see if. Just a second. Let me just call this up real quick because I never remember her. The Scrapper's Guide to Photoshop Elements. And this lady's, Linda Satgast, has really created, she created a two CDs. And like the first one has like 36 different lessons that tell you step by step how to go through, and it builds on the stuff that you've learned in the previous lessons in that.
Hello, and welcome to the Scrapper's Guide to Photoshop Elements. My name is Linda Satgast, and I'll be your instructor for these lessons on how to use Photoshop Elements to create digital scrapbook pages. You might find it helpful to watch these lessons in the order I give them, since I often build upon the knowledge from previous lessons. Let's start by learning how to organize our photos so we can find the photos we need for scrapbooking quickly and easily. When you first open Adobe Photoshop Elements, you'll be greeted with this welcome screen. There are two main parts to Photoshop.
She is a Mac user. That is her computer of choice. However, she did it for using Windows. But with any instructions, she'll give you what the command would be in Windows, and then she'll give you what it would be on the Mac instead. So that is good. This lady has a website. She has a forum. If you subscribe as a premier member, which is $36 a year, you get once a month a more tutorials for whatever their topic is. It comes out the first of each month. You get that. You can become a forum member, and each week she emails you either maybe a little movie or just instructions on how to do some specific little technique and that. And it's very worthwhile. Very, very worthwhile. And if you're a premier member, then you get a discount in their store. So you can buy her CD, which is what these movies are all from.
She had a super deal on Photoshop a while back, like half price.
Yes. Yeah, that's how we got Photoshop. And when she does the monthly downloads, they come with both instructions for Photoshop Elements and Photoshop. So it doesn't hurt which one you're doing. And I download all of them. Because we've got Photoshop, but that's on John's computer, not mine. So, but there, it is good. I highly recommend this. I do not highly recommend I Remember. I Remember, though, would be good if you have kids who you think might be interested in getting into something like that, to give them a beginning doing things like that. Nice rainy day project, get them used to computers, get them used to the drag and drop concept, working with photos, and that. So I guess it's the new way to do craft projects for kids.
Good question I have for you. Since you showed this, and I Remember both, that for someone who maybe want to do this but doesn't want to put a ton of time into it, would you say just go use I Remember? And
it depends upon what do you want your finished products to look like. That's the main thing to me. To me, I Remember maybe if in iRemember you create your own background and put your own shapes where you want them and things like that. Because to me, their templates are just a little bit too something for me.
I mean, the templates seem like they're typical, like, for like a school teacher type.
Templates. Right, that would be good. Yeah, that's a good description. Right, right. There's no sophistication.
But you can't send them to anybody.
You can keep them as JPEGs and just send the individual JPEGs and say, hey, put them together.
On PDF, or ISO.
The JPEG is on the page.
But I know we don't have the speakers on, but this is one further down in the list, and I know I'm, but I've
Let's
got...
Let's use a custom shape to create a rusty key. We'll use this photo called Rust, which I took of an old piece of metal, and we'll also use the skeleton key shape in the Shape Picker menu.
See how many more shapes they have in Photoshop Elements?
Then I'll click and drag an outline while pressing the Shift key to constrain proportions to the original shape. Then I'll click on my photo of a rusty old farm machine,
so
get my move tool, and click and drag it across over onto my skeleton key. Now I have three layers in my layers palette: the original background, the shape, and the photo that I just moved. With the photo layer selected, I'll choose Layer, Group with Previous, or I could use the shortcut Control plus G. Now my photo only shows up where there are pixels in the layer below, in this case, the key. If you want to combine these two layers, you'll run into a shape's peculiarity. Usually you can click on the top layer, and then click on the More menu at the top of the Layers palette and choose Merge Down. But this command isn't available with shapes. You have to actually select the second layer by Control-clicking on it, and then you can choose Merge Layers from the flyout menu. To give the key dimension, we'll add a bevel layer style, and we'll also add a drop shadow. Once you have an embellishment like this, you can use it on a scrapbook page. I'll open the photo bin and click on the thumbnail of the scrapbook page to open it up on the desktop, and then I'll click on the key thumbnail to bring that file forward, and I'll just move it over a bit. Now I can use the Move tool to click and drag it over onto my scrapbook page. Once there, I can press Control plus T, and I can move this anywhere that I want and rotate it. I can resize it by clicking on a corner and pressing my Shift key as I resize it.
Seems like it has become your life.
So shapes like this are very versatile and a lot of fun.
Like you retired 2 days in the mess,
but that just, I know you couldn't hear that, but you're going through the instructions on how to do it. But there you're using Photoshop Elements, and it's really, you can really come up with some neat techniques.
Does she have that for both platforms?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Does she have that for both platforms?
Well, Photoshop Elements is the software you're using.
Yeah, but I have it on the other machine.
Yeah.
So can I get that for the other machine? You know, does she have that for PC and
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, this scrapbooker's guide is...
But the actual software you're using is Photoshop Elements.
Yes,
this,
I have that.
This is not software. This is like training.
Oh, okay. Yes.
This is just... This right here is a CD that you buy from her.
But you have to have Elements on one of your machines.
You need to have Elements.
That's what I'm
yes,
saying.
Ma'am. If, unless you just want to listen to the lessons and never try anything yourself. But it really, I mean, it starts with...
In other words, I don't have Elements on the Mac. I have it on the other platform.
It should work just above. But you know what I'm saying? If you have the disk for Photoshop Elements, it has both versions on it.
It does?
Yes.
Well,
yeah, when you buy it, you get both PC and Mac versions at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Does that apply to Elements 5?
No.
I haven't done that yet, so. 5 is out for PC.
Right.
No. In the past, it's always been on the same desk.
Yeah. Linda? Yes.
And I remember when you first selected your paper size, it looked like you could also select other sizes besides just those grades were up there. Like you could adjust it to unusual size.
Yeah.
You could customize them. When you pick new scrapbook, it comes back here.
And you can change the height.
And if I want to use a standard thing, let's click the page setup and see what we come up with. And you get the... Oh, I could do it on an envelope. Ooh. That's what it says. So you could... You know.
That's for printing now.
But it's for printing, but if you were going to...
Let's go back to the window that you had before. Right there. See so down below the paper size? Right. Yeah. Go down below where you really are. Right there. So you can change the height and width. Looks like.
10.5 by...
Now that would change what the sheet that you're working on.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think in here, one thing I did notice, I was trying to do a 12 by 12 and I had picked one of the templates while I was playing with it. And it was one that had a dog house and then it had the dog's name in a bone. And at that one, the bone was down here underneath the dog house on the bottom of the page. And I went to the 8.5 size and to go through it again. And I said, wait a minute. And the bone was up here on the page. It was no longer down at the bottom. So they have similar templates based on your size of paper, but they have rearranged the objects that are on them to make it better fit.
When you change that size, you got a little pop-up window. What did it say? It said something must be something or other.
I didn't have the decimal point. Between the 10 and the 5, and I think it was saying, lady, you're crazy. I think it was saying it was too wide. Both the width and height must be at least 2 inches, but not more than 100 inches. See, I went over by just a few. So it usually will not let you get into too much trouble. But if I, now I've changed that size, let's see, I don't know what will happen if I pick templates and, you know, I might pick this, but, and see, that's one of, that is one of the reasons why I was using the 8.5 by 8.5 for the demo. Is simply that it would show up, the whole thing would show up on the screen. Well, see, there's. But in this case, I think it would adjust it off. So, yeah, but you can pick your size if you want, but if you want to go on some of the cardstock or scrapbook pages that you can get in the craft stores, you need to stick with those three sizes that they give.
Can you drag that photo box somewhere else?
I dragged the photo box, so the photo would come here, but the underneath box did not go with it.
Can you drag it separately?
Let me get that one back. Which, this yellow?
Mm-hmm.
It's locked. See, the little lock symbol came up. Now I can move the yellow. And see, I think if I lock this right now, I can't drag my picture onto it. And maybe once I put a picture on it. Now, wait a minute. Here's my clip art. Is that where you want?
Yeah, the storage map.
Yes. They will be glad to sell you more. More clip art, if that is not enough. They will sell you more. But I don't want to buy any. But they can. But yeah, see, like the template's the same for no matter which size paper you do, they will have similar templates, you know, to make it work. I wish they would have these turtles separately, but I can pull them off of there, I guess. So that is, I remember. It's all right. It's not great. And that. And so Marius has put my review of it out on the HMUG website. I sent this review to the manufacturer. So I don't know. I have not gone to his website to see if he has published it, but he asked for my permission, and I said, yes, you may. So that's it. I don't have anything else.
Adam, you want to make an announcement? Sure. Not to have nothing to do with HMUG, but...
That's okay. We've had a few.
As a member of the United Cherokee Tribe, we are having a powwow next weekend. I put some flyers on the back table to get it out of here. And for those of you who don't know what a powwow is, it's just Indian festival. Now, see, I'm in Word right now, and I'm pretending as though I'm going to do an envelope, and it shows the number 10 envelope, and here it's giving 4.12 inches by 9.5 inches for the number 10 envelope. Okay, the other night I was trying to do the personal size, what is it, the 3.5 by 6 or 5, and I could never find it on that list.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've given up using that size envelope.
Is there any custom, if you mouse over, it'll show you the same, but it's in the mailbox, that's from Billy's. So she clicks
the drop down. See, I was trying to get my envelope, yeah.
And then she goes, if you mouse over, it'll show you the sizes also. Then she goes up there and moves it. Well, move up another one.
But she's in Word.
I'm in Word. There it shows. Yeah, I forget this thing slow.
Oh, okay.
Executive.
So So if I want to do a 3.5 by 6, the small envelope, then I go to the custom size.
Well, keep going up. It may be up higher.
It may be higher.
Well, it starts.
A U.S. letter.
And then I can pick.
Pages.
Then I can pick letters small.
You can do custom size.
That's paper size.
I would use a paper.
Yeah, but that's what I had for. 3.5 is 3.5 inches. Any other questions, flashes, anything?
Would you recommend getting that separate disc with the instructions for?
I highly recommend that disc. Highly. It, you know, it. Well, first of all, the lady, Linda Sadgast, has ties of some sort to Adobe. When they have conferences where Adobe has a booth set up, Linda Sadgast usually is at that. That disc is, to me, it's excellent for that training. Now, there are two volumes to it. You purchase each separately. But the second volume, which I haven't gotten to yet, goes into more about how you can improve your pictures, your photographs. It's got a little bit more of that. But this shows, I mean, to me, that first disc shows so much of what you can do in Photoshop Elements that a lot of things that people would never realize can be done, as to how you can put the borders around your pictures, and then you give them the shadows, and you can make them beveled, and change all the colors, and change your background colors, and it's just unending what you can do with it. And so, yes, I highly recommend her.
Where do you get that one from? From Adobe or from?
From her. If you can Google Scrapper's Guide.
How much is it?
Scrapper's
Guide.
How much was it?
I don't want to quote a price because I paid the $36 for the annual membership, so I get a discount. Right now, for some reason, I thought the last time I looked at her store, she had one. Okay, she's just come out with a new one for Photoshop Elements 5.0, which doesn't do the Mac users that much good if Adobe's not going to come out with Elements 5.0 for the Mac. But she still has some of the 4.0 version ones, which is what I have.
What's the ballpark? $50, $200, $12?
$20 to $30, but to me, it's definitely worth that money. It to me, if you're interested in scrapbooking, or even just seeing different ways you can play around with elements, it is worth it to do the $36 a year subscription to get the monthly downloads, which usually include movies also. See, I haven't kept this computer up to date, but this one that gets sent as please don't be a movie. I'm not connected to the internet. Fine, I'm not. I don't want to. But this one had something to do with bows and curling them and that. So that is the topic for that month. So it was worth it to do.
You have a cargo file where you can go back and pick up the earlier one?
For a little price, I think you can.
What do you call
it? Well, when she does the download, you know, and you get an email that says it's ready, which is sometime around the first of the month, depending upon what her personal life is like. Well, I'm sorry, her father-in-law just broke his hip last month, so the April one was a little bit, a few days late coming out. You know, this is a very... It's an industry, a company that she started in her home. And a year ago, or a little bit over, when I first heard of them, it was just basically the lady and her husband who were running it, you know, and doing fine. And it has expanded so much that... You know, she's had several people in that, but every once in a while she'll throw in a little homey touch in that. They went away for their 25th anniversary, and so she had a plug-in for the place that they stayed. She's located in the Portland, Oregon area, and so she had a information on the inn that they stayed at for their 25th anniversary. So you get that kind of stuff, too. You can ignore it if you don't like it. So... the monthly downloads are worth it. She went up in price on those this last year, but you get even more stuff with it. You get sometimes you get lots of alphabets and ribbons, and more than just one bow in many colors, because she teaches you how to take a bow and then how to color it yourself, how to make the shadows. And that. So you can do a heck of a lot more just using Photoshop Elements yourself. But if you don't have the time, if you don't have that ability, if you're not artistically enough inclined, then go with iRemember. You can do it. Any words? Okay. Well, I guess it's over. And well, that expired.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, then.